Jill Anderson is a botanist and plant ecologist, and she joins us periodically to talk about phenology or what's going on in our woods and waters right now. Welcome, Jill.
Hello.
So we've seen pictures and video of the large waves caused by the big winds lately. What effects do those waves and winds have on our Lake Superior?
Yeah, let's talk about the effects of a big storms like the ones we had pretty recently. We've had some other big waves, but that got everybody's attention. So one of the things that isn't necessarily very obvious to us is some of those invisible things that are going on. So when we get waves that are as big as some of those waves, and they're big even out on the open lake. So we know from reports of wind speeds that probably a lot of people heard about out on the open lake, that the waves out there were big too. And when you have big waves out there that are cresting and breaking, so they're not as dramatic as when they hit a big wall of rock, they have the potential to actually break down the thermal barrier that is still out there in the lake as a whole. That's developed over the whole summer. The lighter, warmer water stays on the top, and the denser, colder, more oxygenated water is underneath that. That develops over the summer with the warming of the lake. And usually that barrier is there and pretty much impenetrable by the small things of the lake. So the planktonic organisms, both the algae, the plankton, and the zooplankton, so the animal plankton, they don't have the locomotion power to move through that barrier. So they're just floating around and they're stuck up in the upper horizon in that strata. And until we have the turnovers in the spring or in the fall, when the lake's temperature gets to that magic number that I've talked about many times before of 39, and when that upper water reaches that temperature, it's heavier than the water underneath it. That's actually warmer then. And so it falls through. It drops through. It's too heavy, so it's falling through. So that creates this big mixing, and that's the mixing of the whole lake at that time, wherever that's happening. And that's a big event, especially in the spring, but also happens in the fall. But a big storm like this can actually penetrate that thermal barrier in places. You know, it's not going to be the big mixing that happens in the turnover, but it's some penetration and mixing. And so that means that all the organisms that live in that lower, colder zone, and particularly the benthic organisms that are down there at the very bottom, that rely on food drifting down to them because they don't go visiting the upper layers to forage. So they might be, you know, hundreds and hundreds of feet down. Mm-hmm. That they, some of them, had a little feast as the food sources that are normally pinned up above, and lots of times it's just leftovers from lots of interactions, feeding interactions that are going on in that upper lighter water. The crumbs get released through that thermal barrier, the thermocline, and they drift down to the bottom, and voila, manna comes raining down. So that was probably happening in places out in the lake where those big waves were actually punching through and breaking up the thermocline. Now to the more obvious
shoreline
effects. It's a great time to think about some of the geologic terms that we don't necessarily think about very much. So differential erosion is one that comes right to mind. Our lake shore is made up of lots of rocks, but the rocks are all in different kinds. And even though we have mostly bedrock, even the bedrock is not the same in terms of how easily it's weathered by waves like we had. So some, depending upon how fast it cooled or how slowly it cooled, the basalt shoreline, which is our most common bedrock shoreline, some of it's much more easily fractured than others. So, and the form that it took when it cooled. So those big columnar basalts that we are familiar with from down at Palisade Head, for instance, Shovel Point, those are much more weather resistant to everything, including big waves, than the thin basalt flows that we see in places like by the mouth of the Temperance River. So the horizontal flows that are layered upon layered, they can be really thick or they can be quite thin. The thinner the layers, the more fracture, you know, space kind of there between the layers, the more easily fractured the bedrock is. So there's lots of differences in the erosional vulnerability of even bedrock. and between bedrock and basalts and rhyolite. So lots of differences there that are pertinent to how the big waves would impact a place. Another difference would be with what is the aspect or the orientation of a particular part of our shore to the most forceful waves. So if you were oblique to the waves, the big waves coming in, well, then the shore is going to get much less impacted than the parts of the shore that were facing directly towards where the biggest waves came from. Other parts of the shore, not so much here in Cook County, but as we go further down towards Duluth, are not bedrock on the shore at the level that the lake is now anyway. They might be big clay banks, like are really prominent on the south shore of the lake. But we have that in Lake County here in Minnesota, too, and also places where the shoreline is actually a layer of glacial till. So this is unsorted, just all different sized rocks of different kinds and of different sizes. So those shorelines are very vulnerable to major erosion by storms like we had. You know, there again, orientation plays a big role in that. Another real obvious thing is if you visit Paradise Beach area anywhere regularly and you have a picture of, oh, well, this is how the beach looks, probably doesn't look like that at this point, because those gravel and beaches in particular are readily and dramatically reshaped by any big storm like this. One part of the Paradise Beach stretch that I'm familiar with that I have seen since the storm, just dramatic, just completely changed the angle of the beach. All the material was resorted. So all the heavier stuff is definitely really buried now by all this very light sand on the top. So as a big wave comes in, waves like that could carry large cobbles, but as the wave loses energy, those drop out first, and then the little fine grain materials are deposited in layers on top of that. So big cuts from some parts of the beach that were then moved not that far away, but then redeposited in another part of the long stretch of the beach. So it's a great time to go out and see, because we haven't had any other big storms to really reshape things again. So it's a good time to go out and look at what the changes were made, as is right in town with the Tombolo, which is connects town center to Artist Point and the Lighthouse Point. That stretch of beach there had some major changes made to it by the big storm.
Chael Anderson regularly fills us in on current events in the woods and waters, and thanks for explaining the effects of big wind on our big lake.
You're welcome.